This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
In this video, I'm sharing three things I learned from the book Charisma Myth by Olivia Fox. Now, this book is really fascinating. The basic premise is charisma something that's innate, genetic, something that some people have it, some people don't? Or can it be deconstructed and learned by anybody? Now, obviously, her answer is that it can be learned by anybody. So the first thing I got from this book really was the definition of charisma and understanding what it actually is. She says charisma is composed of three parts: presence, high warmth, and high power. Those are the three things that someone who's charismatic has to basically exude or give off to others. Now, one thing that's important to note is what charisma is not. It's not an effervescent, bubbly, outgoing, gregarious personality that we often associate with being charismatic. But it's these three characteristics that basically make someone magnetic. They make people drawn to them. One example that she gives is if you're in a room and you notice that everyone in the room is taking their cues from a particular person without them introducing themselves as such, you know that that's the leader. That's them exuding their power just by the cues of the other people in the room. So let's break these down. Presence is the first one. Now, presence is what most people want to work on. An executive will say, I need to establish an executive presence, or I need to have the presence of a leader. That's something that they want to work on. Now, when it comes to just presence at a personal level, we know this very well. It's when we're speaking to someone and they're distracted. Now, sometimes it's as obvious as them being on the phone, right? Carrying on another conversation while speaking to us, we know that they're not fully present. Another way that this happens is when we're speaking with someone and we can tell that something's wrong, something's off. They're not fully there. Their mind is wandering, or they're going through the motions or something else. And so we know that that person was not fully present with us. The challenge then is really, how do I make sure that I'm doing the things to be present for other people and not be that distracted person? And it's even more challenging because society's always pushing us to being distracted. We're in a state of what she calls in the book, constant partial attention with everything that we do. So she gives some tips and tricks on how to be more present in the moment. One of them is very simple. She says, be self-critical and evaluate yourself. If you notice that your mind is wandering, if you notice that you're doing something else, then stop and take a breath and refocus and make yourself present in that moment again. Because the bar of entry is so low, because most people by default aren't present in conversations, after a 5-minute conversation of being present with someone, you can create a wow factor. Now, the other components of charisma are high power and high warmth. And this is just giving off the impression that you have obviously power, the ability to do things, the ability to affect the world around you. And then warmth is basically the goodwill that you'll do those things for the right reasons. When someone has high power, but not high warmth, then that person usually comes across as arrogant or standoffish. We've all met people like that. On the other side, if someone has high warmth, but they don't have power, they often come across as overeager or subservient. And both of those are turnoffs for most people. We tend to seek out people who have both high warmth and high power. The second thing that I learned from this book, and this was a huge game changer for me, and that is that body language is involuntary, but it can still be controlled. Now, that sounds like a very contradictory premise, that if your body language is involuntary, how can you control it? And this is where the book gets really, really interesting. So she talks about a study that the MIT Media Lab did, where they predicted with 87% accuracy, watching people on the phone doing business deals, you know, business pitches, sales calls, negotiations, all these different things, and with 87% accuracy predicted who came out on top without hearing a single word of the conversation, purely observed by body language. That shouldn't really come as a surprise. We've all heard things like, you know, 80% of communication is nonverbal. It's not what you say, it's how you make people feel, and all these different things. Well, there's a lot of truth to those, but how do you control it? That's the real question. And see, we've all heard speeches, we've all heard speakers, where you go in and you sit, and you come out, and there might not have been anything wrong with the talk. You might hear a recording, and technically everything's correct, everything's perfect, there's no mistakes, there's nothing that you can nitpick on. But still, you come out of that saying, I got a bad vibe. I got a bad feeling. Something didn't connect. Something didn't feel right. I just got a bad feeling about it, right? All these different things that we say, we can't explain why, but something turned us off. And even though we can't maybe technically discredit what someone said, the fact that we felt that way discredits the person in our eyes moving forward. On the flip side, we've all heard people that, from a technical perspective, their talk may not have been great. They might not have spoken well. They may have bad grammar, bad presentation skills, all these different things. But we forgive those mistakes because we felt connected with what they had to say. We got a good vibe from them. Now, how do you control it? See, to control it, we have to understand that our body physically manifests what's in our mind. So what we think has a physical reaction. Let me give you an example. If I tell you right now to imagine someone taking their long fingernails and scratching them slowly down a chalkboard, it produces a visceral fit. Like you said, you feel a shiver go up your spine. Like you cringe at the thought of those nails on the chalkboard. Every time I say that phrase, we cringe. There's a physical reaction to something that's in our mind. And so when we're speaking with someone, the mental state that we're in, the way that we view the person, the way that we feel about them, all of those things come out in our body language. So when it comes to speaking, for example, if you view your audience with disdain, or you view yourself as better than them, or that maybe a conversation is a waste of time, or if you view someone as beneath you or a waste of time or something like that, it doesn't matter what you're saying, that message will be non-verbally communicated through your, you know, facial expressions, your hand gestures, all these different things that you might not be thinking about. There's a really famous video, and I'll link to it in the description below, from the 1992 presidential debates. And there's a particular question that was posed to the candidates. And I want you to watch the video in the description on mute. Watch it on mute first, and then go back and watch it with the words in there. When you watch it on mute, you'll start to see when Bush is answering the question that he's flustered, he's annoyed, he's angry. And you see him like shake his hands, point his fingers, and take very, you know, hard movements with his body. And there's no way that he's thinking in his head, let me shake my hand at this person, let me look annoyed right now. It just happens throughout the course of talking. On the flip side, you'll see when Clinton gets up to talk that he projects warmth and kindness. Even though you don't hear what he's saying, you can tell that that's what's happening. That's the power of your body language being manifested from the mental state that you're in. So controlling your mental state, it's not just how you view and what you think about the person that you're speaking to or the audience that you're speaking to, but it's also just what type of mood are you in. See, she gives an example in the book that really resonated with me. She says, imagine that you're driving to work and some jerk cuts you off, you almost get into a wreck, and you know, it just, when you get to work, it's ruined your day. All you can think about is this guy that almost got you into a car accident and how he should have been going slower, he should have been doing this, and it affects your general mood and your demeanor. And so when people come and talk to you, you're a little bit more short-tempered, you're a little bit more curt than normal, you're, you know, all these different things are manifesting themselves as the day goes on in your body language and the way that you're dealing with people. You might not realize it, or you might even say, I have a valid excuse. But the reality is the people that you're speaking to aren't having that connection. On the flip side, she says you can rewrite reality. And now that sounds like really crazy, but really what it is you're making an excuse for the person. So she says when you get cut off, imagine, what if you just told yourself that, oh, I got cut off. You know what? That was probably a distraught mother who needed to get her kid to the hospital right away. And if that was me, I probably would have done the same thing. And if I'm able to basically take this incident of getting cut off on the road and almost getting into a car wreck, I have two ways of responding to it. One, I can let the negativity fester, or two, I can create a logical excuse, a valid excuse, rewrite the reality of what happened, say, oh, you know what? It was a distraught mother, her kid needed help, I would have done the same thing. Now all of a sudden, that incident is over. It's not affecting my mental state anymore and I'm back to normal. And this is why people recommend doing gratitude exercises. That stop and take some time to just be thankful for the things that you have, the things that we overlook, the things that we take for granted. Because the more grateful that you are, the more that it affects your mental state. And the more that you shift your mental state to one of gratitude and kindness, the more that it enables you to make that connection, make that relationship with somebody. See, when we talk about charisma, it's not just being charismatic for the sake of it, is establishing relationships, is increasing influence, is increasing leadership, is increasing your ability to do more, whether that's sales or, you know, getting buy-in for a certain initiative. All these different things, a lot of them come down to your ability to connect with people, and that's why it's so important. The third thing that I learned from this book was the idea of practicing compassion. We talked earlier about high warmth, like how do you develop warmth with someone? So that's that aspect of goodwill. So goodwill is when you're speaking to someone and you wish good for them. It's like, oh, hey, I hope you have a good day. That's goodwill. A step beyond that is empathy. And empathy is like a big buzzword now. And it's basically your ability to identify with someone else's situation, to be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes and see things from their perspective. So now you understand what they're going through. She says compassion is the third level beyond that, is combining the two. It's understanding someone's situation while still wanting what's best for them. And when you combine those two and you have that compassion, that creates the warmth that we're trying to portray. The catch is, this is something that can't be faked. See, when we talk about things like body language and warmth, you can easily say, well, you know what? As long as you smile at people and you speak to them, you'll accomplish that. But everyone can tell the difference between a fake smile and a real smile. If you don't genuinely like and care for the people that you're dealing with, you won't be able to project warmth. And this is an integral part of character. I talked about character a little bit when I went through three things I learned from the book Do Over by John Acuff. I'll link to the video. It'll be in the description. But it talked about part of your career savings account is having that high character. And in this book, we're learning that in order to have character, in order to project that warmth, to be that type of person that other people want to be around, you have to genuinely care about them mentally. Your mental state has to be one of care, concern, empathy, and goodwill. That will manifest itself in your interaction with someone, and they'll be able to sense from that nonverbal communication that you are genuine, that you're establishing a genuine relationship, and that will help you connect and move forward. That's three things I learned from the book Charisma Myth by Olivia Fox. There's a link to get the book in the description. I highly recommend reading this book. It was a game changer for me. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. We put up a new video every week. And if you could do one favor, please let one friend know about this channel so that they can subscribe, and please help spread the word. Thanks.